Wait, let me look that up on the internet real quick.
TagCastPodcast.com.
We all know Amazon has amazing deals and free shipping on orders over $25. If you use our link on our website, TagCastPodcast.com, we'll get a small kickback and you'll be supporting our show. Just go to the top right hand of our website, TagCastPodcast.com, and click on the link.
And now it's time for the TagCast Podcast with Terry and Gatch. My name's Terry Guile.
I don't like your jerk-off name. I don't like your jerk-off face. I don't like your jerk-off behavior. And I don't like you, jerk-off.
See, because I paid a late for weed like in the 70s and I never got the real one back.
You just got tagged.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.
And his name is Dustin Gatchel.
I heard in Hawaii, your spam email is your good email.
The TagCast Podcast starts right now.
Hello, and welcome to a special list-isode, bonus-isode, extra-isode of the TagCast Podcast.
I think they've been dubbed bonus-isodes.
Bonus-isodes.
Yeah, it's a bonus episode.
Yeah, I think I wrote a couple different things. But bonus-ode. I am Gatch, and this is, I'm here with Terry Guile.
That's me.
And Dave Wambacher, special
That's
guest.
That's me.
And today we're going to talk about metal and hard rock albums from 1980. Not the 80s, but 1980.
Freshman in high school.
We got some fun albums to talk about, I think.
See, now I was just singing Holy Diver to Heaven and Hell, but
it still works.
I know. You could do a mashup.
It's like Henry Rollins says, you know. Every Dio album's got at least one evil woman. Look out tonight.
Dio was my favorite actor in Cheers.
That was his little sister.
Okay. Oh, Carla?
That was his sister, Carla.
Oh, okay.
That's just like I was wondering when Gene Simmons of Kiss is finally going to come out and let everybody know that Richard is actually his illegitimate half-sister. Richard Simmons.
Oh, I was going to say, Richard.
Richard Simmons. Gene Simmons.
They're both sweating to the oldies.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
They both got the hair.
Yeah. All right,
Gene Simmons is sweating to the pancakes.
That's right. And the pancake makeup, too.
All right, so we're just going to kind of go back and forth a little bit different like than we did last time, but we both got our own lists, which
yeah,
is
but
cool.
Let's touch on that first one, though, Black Sabbath, Heaven and Hell.
Yeah, that is very nice.
Oh, what
nice.
A great album.
Now, you know what that was? That was the first album that featured Ronnie James Dio with Black Sabbath.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And we were talking earlier, me and Dustin were about the history of Ronnie James Dio. Did you know that in the 60s he was in a doo-wop band called Ronnie Dio and the Blue Caps?
No kidding.
Yeah, like straight up doo-wop.
He gave his Ronnie last Dio. Name as Dio. What is his real last name?
It's like, man, we should look it up, but I don't know. It's not Dio.
Dio
means God in Italian, and he's opted to call himself that.
You're pulling like a Ween Brothers thing on me. I did not know
you
that
know?
His last name was not
it's
Dio.
It's like Paparazzi, or Paparazzi, not Paparazzi, but Paparanto.
Sorry, whole world is destroyed.
I know,
dude.
His name's not Dio. But then it was weird that, you know, he was in the band Elf.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, what a great name for a band with Ronnie James.
A little short
dude. You ever seen that guy? Holy cow.
But the weird thing about Elf is that they were like not primarily, but mostly a cover band. And they were doing stuff in the early 70s like Won't Get Fooled Again by The Who. And
Zeppelin probably.
Yeah. And then I heard a 1972 version of Elf doing War Pigs.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
Doing Sabbath before.
Oh, I would love to hear that.
YouTube. All you got to do is YouTube it and it will come up. What did I say? Oh, Elf. Just type in Elf on whatever song you want. He does Locomotive Breath.
Oh, man.
Locomotive Breath.
Help by the Beatles. Whatever the one was, Sitting by the Park Bench. Aqualung. Yeah. So Dio doing Aqualung, which is just crazy.
Is there any of that on YouTube or anything?
It's like,
yes, it's all of those. That's where I found it. And if you search Ronnie Dio from 1962, you can find out that.
62?
Yep.
How old was the man?
He was 67. He was born in 1942.
That's like 15, though.
So he was 20, and he's clean cut. The pictures of him are just so awesome.
Wow,
his name was Ronald James Padovano.
Padovano.
Yeah. It was close to Pavarotti.
Oh, he should have been like a tenor then.
The first Pavarotti.
It started with a pop. Boy, so, yeah, what did that album do for you, Dustin?
Well, I didn't buy one. It was, you know, I'm familiar with the hits on the radio and stuff. I'm not that familiar with the album, to be honest with you.
It has the song that Henry Rollins talks about. It's got Walk Away.
Yeah. I've heard
Evil
a few
Woman.
Songs, and I've probably heard the album all the way through, you know, a handful of times. But it's a good album. I like, you know, obviously the Heaven and Hell.
It's got Neon Nights. You know?
Yeah. I'm a big fan of Dio. I like the Dio stuff that I hear of Black Sabbath, you know.
But at in 1980, what, that's not something that you would have been listening to.
I was four.
Oh, shit. Yeah. That's right. Sorry.
No, see, I went back. I went back to that album.
That's kind of like that comment on our Facebook where I said, what were you listening to in 1984? And our buddy Justin Slashbanger, he said, Voivod, Bathory, and something else. And I'm saying, so that's what you were listening to when you were four? And he's like, I can't remember what his response was.
No, he said Hulk Hogan and the Yellow Boot Band.
Yeah, that's what it was. But, you know, it's cool.
I'm going to tell you, brother.
I'm a real American.
It's cool to tell us what your favorite 84 album is now, but we're talking what were you actually listening to.
Well, see,
to
I saw Hulk Hogan.
I want to know what people were actually listening to in 1980. People should send that in or post it on our Facebook page.
I was listening to albums that aren't on my list because we're going for more heavy metal. I had The Cars, Candio.
That was one of the first, a good one.
I believe Tom Petty. No, that was probably 81. When
I was probably listening to Raffi.
Oh yeah, because you were four. That's right.
Yeah,
I'm trying to think. I'm lucky because when I was four, it's a little kids.
Yeah, it's
guy.
A kids pop.
He sings
singer.
Songs that kids like. I doubt if he's a chimo. The chimo. Ding dong. But, you know, I feel lucky because when I was four, 1972, my parents were listening to Zeppelin and John Mayall and just like Frank Zappa and Alice Cooper.
When I was four,
it was, you know, I heard
Peter
my
Paul
mom.
Mary.
No, I heard my mom say, hey, there's a new Sesame Street coming out. It's going to be called Electric Company.
Oh, I remember.
Oh,
I don't
remember. I remember my mom telling me that Electric Company was coming out.
Wow.
I was stoked. Yeah. I can't differentiate between Electric Company and Sesame Street because they were like a package deal to
me. Absolutely.
I don't know if they came on right after each other or not, but I think
they did.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they did.
So being four in 1980 really makes it a difference, you know, because you can.
Yeah, for sure.
You're not listening
but,
to.
I mean,
the word nostalgia
by all accounts,
doesn't apply.
I mean, I've had plenty of time to go and give Heaven and Hell a listen to.
For sure.
And I have a few times in the background, you know, and it's a good album.
Yep. Personally, I think it's their best. I think it's Black Sabbath's best,
really?
Best album, yeah.
Wow.
Paranoid's up there.
That's a hard statement because there's have so many, you know.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely.
Is that best overall?
Best Black Sabbath, regardless of who's saying.
Well, I can respect that, you know. Yeah, especially if you're a bigger Dio fan than Ozzy.
I'm going
to sing better than Ozzy.
Yeah.
You know.
I think just because of the amount of time, I don't know, if maybe the amount of times I've heard it, but I'd have to say Master of Reality.
What's the one that the Wizard's on? That's the first one, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Black Sabbath.
I think that one.
That's a good one.
And
it is.
I once met a fellow who said his favorite was Technical Ecstasy.
Ooh. And that's like a 76, second-to-last penultimate Ozzy release, right?
I think his big thing was he kept telling us it was like the Godfather album to hair metal.
I don't know. They were really starting to fall apart at that time because Ozzy was really fucked up. And Never Say Die is not a good album, I don't think, either.
Yeah,
the last album.
I've never really listened to it. He tried to force us to listen to it, but it just never really caught my ear.
And then Headless Cross happened.
When was that?
I think it came out when I was in basic training, which would have been 1984, 1985.
And that was after Dio was gone.
Yes.
Is it Ian Gillan or?
No. It was after him, too. I don't even know who the singer is.
They went through a few there.
I think he's actually done more than one album with
him. Yeah. I think most of them did at least two or something.
Yeah, except Ron Keel.
I'm gonna throw out there. Back in Black by AC/DC.
Listen to The Right to Rock. Every single time he sings a note, he drops it off. You've got it.
Yeah.
The Right to Rock. Seriously,
maybe that's his style.
Yeah. I know. Well, just that album. Yeah. His other albums he didn't do that on. Yeah. But I remember thinking to myself, you know what? I think he does that a lot on this album. I'm going to listen to it.
Yeah.
And I sat there and just paying attention to it. And every single note he sings, he drops it off. What do you call that as a musician?
I guess it would be a, it's not a crescendo because that's a
time.
A descendo?
I don't know what you would call it. I'll have to look that up,
a
though.
A descendo.
Meanwhile, back to the 80s.
Yeah, AC/DC Back in Black, you said.
Back in Black!
That was 1980?
Yep.
Oh,
yeah.
God, what a great album.
It was a great album. Yeah. It was Brian's first one, right?
Yeah, and it's weird that, you know, Bon Scott passed away February 19th, 1980, and still before the end of the year, they got the new album out.
Yeah. Do you think he wrote the lyrics? And
I think he wrote a good majority of them.
Yeah.
Did you ever hear, what's his name, Brian?
Johnson?
Johnson. Talking about the first recording session he had with AC/DC.
No.
The first song he did was Back in Black. And they went through it, played the song and just the music and said, this is what we want.
Uh-huh.
And then he just sort of winged it. You know, he had the lyrics in front of him. It was the first time he'd read them was right before he started singing.
Uh-huh.
Right.
And he just Back in Black.
Well, I bet his first version was,
No. They
you gotta
finished.
Get the melody before you can get started.
They finished, and the first thing he wanted to do was say, "Sorry, blokes, that wasn't my best. Let me. And Angus Young piped up and says, "You know what? That's exactly what we're looking for.
Yeah,
that's exactly right. You
that's
got
awesome.
It.
Yeah,
yep.
And
the right
just,
to rock.
Just call it a place. Talk. Yeah,
you got it.
Yep.
Yeah.
And he said, "Money talks. BS talks.
Yeah. So it'd be
oh,
weird though.
It was a good album. What was Shoot to Kill was on there? Right?
Shoot to Thrill.
Shoot to Thrill, yeah.
That whole album to me is like non. It's like you hear those songs on the radio still.
Yeah.
Which album is that?
Back in Black.
Yeah, okay.
Because you got Hell's Bells, you got Shoot to Thrill, you got
rock
Have a Drink
roll,
on Me.
Rock and Roll Ain't Noise Pollution.
Even though,
Giving the Dog a Bone, Back in Black.
It's hard to say because I definitely like Bon Scott better. And
now, there's one song.
Albums, but man, that might be the most one of their tighter albums.
There's one song on that album
great.
That has became to me the Smells Like Teen Spirit of ACDC.
Yeah,
and it's
yeah,
You Shook Me All Night
probably,
Long.
Yeah,
which
that
when I was 12.
They should cut that out of the album.
When I was 12 years old and that came out, it was okay. I didn't even, it was different.
Yeah, you were going to middle school dances and they were playing it there.
It was a little bit more yeah, it was a little bit more upbeat and it was kind of a love song
along
you know in a
Beth.
Way yeah Beth, I hear you calling but
oh,
yeah it, that was the only song that I didn't really like off the, I mean I guess I liked it then but I don't really
can
like
I borrow
it now.
Can I borrow an ice pick?
Yeah.
So I want to stab the part of my brain that remembers how Beth goes. God,
Beth, I hear you calling.
Yeah.
Poor Peter Chris.
Yeah.
But yeah, Back in Black, I have a strong memory of a kid in high school who always had a really big boombox, and he always brought AC/DC, and he used to blast that in the halls nearly every day, and it just became kind of the soundtrack of whatever year that was, seventh grade
absolutely,
or whatever it was.
With me, it was the freshman year of high school. We were riding a bus, and the radio went out, and somebody made a joke about, oh, well, let's just all chip in and buy a tape player for it, cassette player. So we did.
Hell yeah.
And the bus driver was like, I'll play whatever the hell you want.
Wow.
And so one person would get to choose the album that would go in, the tape, and you had to have the tape, of course.
Yeah, you didn't have any Two Live Crew to put in there.
No.
They weren't out yet.
Yeah, no. But AC/DC Back in Black was
in
the
Black!
That got played more than anything else, so I used to listen to that on the way to school every
Giving the
day.
Dog a bone.
Yeah.
Rockin'
and just about every song. And then what was the other last song on the very last song of the album was, Let Me Put My Love Into You, Babe.
Oh, wow.
Which was the slow it down, kind of down and dirty kind of thing. And I'm going to believe probably that Bon Scott wrote that album and maybe,
I think that's a safe bet.
Yeah.
I think
it reminds me of kind of like the Night Prowler.
If you think of like the early catalog and the lyrics of like what's come out since then, I mean, I don't know. What was their albums after that with Brian Johnson that were good? I mean, there was Who Made
Fly
Who,
on the Wall,
right?
And Fly on the Wall was a good album. I like every song on that album.
I think that the best one after Back in Black was the one right after it, which was For Those,
Dirty
About,
Deeds.
To, For Those About to Rock.
Oh, for I saw that concert in Nashville, Tennessee. Yeah.
And that was a pretty good album.
Who Made Who as a soundtrack, you know.
Yeah,
all
for
right.
Maximum
and it's
Overdrive,
kind of a greatest hits.
Which is a terrible
except
movie,
for
but I love
who.
It.
Oh, any Stephen King that's campy and just terrible is just good. And the same.
I hated the way they changed the ending to It.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, I want to see the giant turtle.
And I think the fly on the wall was really the hair that broke the camel's back, or the whatever you call it.
Yeah.
That's where I kind of lost AC/DC. I
love every song on that album, but of course,
Fly on the Wall. Flick of the Switch. Okay, yeah. Fly on the Wall is the one I didn't like. Flick of the Switch is the one, the last one that I liked. That had the Flick of the Switch.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, we don't want to spend the whole episode on AC/DC. Yeah. Here's my first one, which is kind of in the same vein of Sabbath and AC/DC. I'm going to say Van Halen's Women and Children First.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, what are the
hits on that one?
Oh, man. That one ended up being
so much
nonstop
better than
hits.
Down.
What the heck was it? It was the first one, Cradle Will Rock.
It will rock, man, when you got David Lee Roth in there.
And that was such a rebellious teen song. And
they were all about teenage rebellion, weren't they?
Yeah. Yeah, it was all about nailing teenage
girls.
They
knew how to fucking rock.
And Party.
Both those bands.
Party. Because the second song, Everybody Wants Some, I Want Some Too.
Yeah.
That could be about drugs, sex, drugs, rock and roll.
Oh,
probably
so
about all three.
It could
all
be about toast.
Yep.
Or any combination.
Everybody Wants Some Toast.
I Want Some Too.
Yeah, dude. Fucking
and I think one of the most overlooked song on the album, and that was one of my favorites, was that Romeo Delight. So the last song on side one.
How's that go?
Yeah. I'm taking whiskey to the party tonight, and I'm looking for somebody to squeeze. Da-na-na-na-na. See, it's overlooked. It's one that you don't really remember. It's a non-hit.
It was a rap song.
Oh, it's just upbeat. It was. It was. They had a guest. The guy from Two Live Crew was on that. Or wait, it was Grandmaster Flash. I
think we're still looking for.
Bringing you a blast.
Can you name a Van Hagar song hit that was not a love song?
Okay, we got I'll Wait. How do I know there's at least one.
Time's up. All right, what are we talking about?
We're talking about Women and Children First, which also had Take Your Whiskey Home, which was awesome. It was like acoustic intro thing, which they hadn't really done much of that.
Some places charge for that. If you want to cap up your whiskey, you know what? Take an open container.
You can't
outside
do that.
The bar.
Not in most places.
I'll have to staple.
So yeah, that was one of my favorites. I believe that either me or my brother or my older cousin bought that like right when it came out, and we were waiting for it because Van Halen 2 wasn't the greatest. It had some clunkers on it.
Really? Yeah, but, there's a couple good ones on there too.
Yeah,
I don't remember the song list, but I remember
Dead on Arrival was good. Yeah. And. Dead or Alive, that's right. Yeah.
Dead or Alive.
Yep. And that had Beautiful Girls.
You got to throw the Michael Anthony high harmony into that.
I can't do it without helium. All right, what do you got? what do you got next on the list?
That's why Sammy Hagar hired him.
I got one of the greatest hard rock songs of all time, Ace of Spades by Motorhead.
That came out in 1980?
Yeah, no kidding. Jeez. I've got Motorhead's greatest hits on my computer, and I listened to that.
1980, for sure.
Not on there.
I just thought it was older than that for some reason.
I don't know. It was on my list. I'm not saying.
Oh, it is.
This list isn't accurate.
Oh, mine's accurate.
Well, I was a late comer to Motorhead.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was too, and it's probably one of the only songs I know. I know they got 51 other songs all about other different cards.
Yeah, with the same chord progression.
Yep, and then there's the Joker. But I think they let Steve Miller. It was like the Bruce Springsteen wrote Wrapped Up Like a Douche.
Yeah, for Manfred Mann.
Yeah, you know, he did.
But you know that he
did
record that before they did.
Yeah, have you ever heard it?
It's bad.
It's really bad. Yeah. It's Bob Dylan bad.
I think I have heard that.
It's Neil Young bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Bruce Springsteen song. Oh, I probably shouldn't.
So Ace Bob of Spades, Dylan. What
we'll
do you know?
We'll never have another download in New Jersey.
So you don't know much about the full album, just the song,
I do not. I'm sorry.
No, I don't either.
Every time I hear that song,
it's
on
every
list. I want to sing it into a microphone.
It might as well.
About 6 inches above my head.
And I think that's why Lemmy's voice sounds like it does, because if you ever look up like you're trying to reach to a microphone that's 6 inches above your it stretches your neck out.
Yeah.
And you're
Ace of Spades! Ace of Spades!
You think you walked around in school like that?
Yep.
Now, here's a cool thing.
He had a microphone hanging from the front of his hat.
I don't know if you guys have checked this out, but there's a movie that came out in the big screen.
Oh, yeah.
It's called Lemmy. And it's really good. It's got interviews with everybody from Dave Grohl to
Lemmy Grohl.
Paul Stanley to just everybody in rock and heavy metal. And it's all about Lemmy and his life and what bands he was
in.
And
it's Mole.
So it's not like Beatles anthology where, you know, you get Paul and John sitting next to each other.
This
going,
is Lemmy.
You know, yeah. this was the inspiration for this song, and this is why we did this.
Yeah.
But
and
basically, his voice kind of sounds
goes,
like that.
No. I only have one English accent. I can't do John and Paul.
Let me hear a Cockney
accent.
Too right, mate.
If his mole could write a book, the stories it could tell.
He told
I thought
me
they
how
were just
to walk
too.
And how to talk
I thought they were Cocoa
genuine
Puffs.
Genuine lying.
he thought it was a Cocoa Puff.
He got two Cocoa Puffs stuck on his face, and they just never came off. So he's like,
they actually make me look a bit better, mate, so why don't you just surgically attach it to my face?
And my friend Dano from the Athearchist actually met him at the Whiskey A Go-Go. He met Lemmy. And he goes, when I came up to him, the only thing I could just... I just wanted to touch his mole. So I just fucking looked right at him, and I was like, can I tell you? Like, yeah, you can touch him, mate.
That's right.
So, yeah, Motorhead, it was a great hit, but not really as important of
a
full
like a
album.
Well, no, that was one of the ones I went back for. You know?
Yeah.
I heard about it later, and then I went back.
Yeah, it was,
so,
you know.
I have trouble with Motorhead as telling what came out when.
Yeah. Now, I don't mind including this next album because this was before they got gay. And when I say gay, I don't mean homosexual. And it was before the drummer lost their arm, Def Leppard, On Through the Night, the first album. Which includes a song that my band who just disbanded and played their last show last week, Game Over, had been covering, Wasted by Def Leppard, which is on that album. It had Rock Brigade.
Oh, God, I love that
great
album.
And On Through the Night, actually...
I actually stumbled across that in Basic Training.
That's an awesome album.
They
I have
actually
it on
had
vinyl.
That album for sale on cassette. In the PX
when
I was in basic training, and I had like three trips to the PX. I spotted it the first time, and then the second time I went to the PX in basic training, you know, it's
still
like
there
4 weeks later, and I was like,
still there.
I got to get that tape.
And it's got that truck on that semi truck on the front of it with the Def Leppard triangle thing.
Hello
and that was
America.
Yeah, Hello America. And that was their first original lineup with what you talking about, Pete Willis on guitar. Before they got not Phil Collins, which is Phil Collin.
Yeah.
But and now Steve Clark is dead, and Rick Allen has one arm.
Well, you know what you get when you cross.
Joe Elliott sings horribly these days. I saw him on Palladia the other night.
Yeah.
Bad. He lets the audience sing most of the time, and that's good. But you got a Def Leppard joke?
I did, but I spaced it.
Damn
it. I'll think of it here in a minute.
Okay, well, we'll come back to
Michael J. Fox is going to start his own cooking show. It's called Shake and Bake.
Ayo! You know how he likes his martinis, right?
Yeah. What do you get when you cross a guitar player and a drummer from Def Leppard?
I don't know.
A one-armed dead guy.
That's good. I wish I had the...
All right.
Okay, what's your next on the list?
My next is Blizzard of Oz.
Good one.
Wow.
Good one.
That was put Ozzy on the map as Ozzy Osbourne.
Boy, did it ever.
And thanks to his not wife, but then manager Sharon.
Mm-hmm.
What was her last name?
Was this around the time that he was pissing on the Alamo?
It was just previous to that. This was before he was pissing on Alamos and biting heads off of bats and doves and stuff like that. But
who played?
Did that really happen?
In a
who
press conference,
guitar on this album.
On this album was Randy Rhoads, dude. One of the best guitarists ever. I think. Wow. I think he was.
All right. I'd never asked
that
question.
I think he's up there.
Very influential.
He's brilliant. Brilliant.
Yeah. Listen to a song.
He's the first one that I was able to recognize as, you know, that's a guitar player
you hear
for this band.
Yeah.
His name is Randy Rhoads.
And the tone that he had, you could hear his guitar and say, just like Slayer, that's them.
Yeah, I could identify Randy Rhoads before I could identify Eddie Van Halen.
Well, he had the polka dotted guitar and the polka dotted vest.
Well, I'm talking by sound.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, Randy Rhoads, he was Randy a new Rhodes. Guy. No one had heard of him, and luckily Ozzy found him. He was a great classically trained guitarist. He'd been playing since he was a small child. And now I think that the rhythm section on this album kind of got the short end of the stick. Bob Daisley and Lee Kerslake.
Yeah.
They got replaced. They got replaced immediately by Tommy Aldridge and Rudy Sarzo. Which
is a pretty good
update. Oh, fuck, man. They're smart for doing it, but I just feel bad because those guys kind of just were, they just got used as studio musicians. And then, of course, Rudy Sarzo was in Quiet Riot at the time. And he was getting ready to go back to Quiet Riot because they hadn't had their big break yet.
Because was he with Ozzy on
because Randy Rhoads was
Moon Tour? Bark at the
Rudy
Moon Tour?
Sarzo.
No,
no,
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so.
I saw Quiet Riot right before I saw
No,
Ozzy
because Quiet Riot blew up and then he went with Quiet Riot because Randy Rhoads was the original guitarist for Quiet Riot.
Right, right. Yeah.
And then, so that's how he knew Rudy Sarzo. And Tommy Aldridge had been playing for everybody from Pat Travers to, I can't remember who else he was playing for. And I think he plays for Whitesnake now, which is.
Whitesnake is still together. David Coverdale?
They stuck. Adrian Vandenberg. No, wait, he plays for Def Leppard, who is a. Is it bad?
Is David Coverdale still in the band?
Yeah. It's a Coverdale band. It's a Whitesnake Coverdale band. Yeah.
Now, every time he inhales, he's got to have the oxygen thing, the tube going to his nose, right?
Does he?
I would imagine. How old is he? He's got to be 85, 90.
No, he's Plant's age.
Peter Frampton now does the talk box.
Robert Plant's 85 years old.
No, Dio was only 67 when he died.
Yeah, but Dio was good.
Yeah, he was, but they were still the same age. Now, speaking of Whitesnake, they had an album come out in 1980.
Were they ready to rock?
Ready and willing. Now, that must be pre-slided in.
I was going to because the next one was the one that stuck him in.
Yeah.
I don't know about the good
one. In 1980.
But the one that made him a lot of money.
I'd never even heard of this album when it came out, and I didn't like Whitesnake.
You were not ready and willing into Whitesnake.
I wasn't. I was into, like... I was a 12-year-old kid. I was listening to a lot of Journey, Kiss, and The Cars, and Tom Petty, and Led Zeppelin, and
you
stuff
were getting
like
into that 1980s Chicago, Look Away?
No. My Chicago is 25 or 6 to 4, Saturday in the Park.
Yeah, old 70s.
You know what 25 or 6 to 4 means, right?
Yeah.
25 or 26 minutes before 4 o'clock?
Yeah.
Yeah, right, sitting on the floor.
25 or 6 minutes. Yeah. Yeah. They're all night just up looking at the clock.
I always thought that was a cool story.
So, yeah, the only reason I mentioned Whitesnake is because we were talking about Whitesnake.
Yeah, is
that
album, your pick? Let's go
it's
on
not
to
a
your
pick.
Next pick.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
My next pick?
Well, that's not your pick, Whitesnake.
What was the name of the album?
Whitesnake pick. I never caught a Whitesnake
pick. Yeah, but what was the name of the album?
Ready and Willing.
Ready and Willing.
See,
our awesome segment blew by right by our guest.
Yeah, that's okay. Here's one that I'm going to say.
I think I heard it go by.
Ted Nugent's Scream Dream.
Wow.
What songs are on that one?
Wango Zetango. Yep.
So
and Terminus El Dorado.
That's right before Double Live Gone's on that.
No,
it was after. It was after
was
Double
it?
Live
Gone. I thought Wango Zetango was on Double Live Gone's on.
No.
What album is that on?
It's
the live version.
Not on any live version that I know. Maybe.
Really?
Yeah.
How many animals were harmed in the making of that album?
Scream Dream?
Yeah.
He probably shot a bunch and ate them while it was in the studio.
You know what? They didn't suffer.
No. He shot them dead with a bow and arrow.
I bet he went on a political rant on them first.
But Wango Tango, Fred, I almost call him Fred. Fred Bear. Remember that song by Ted Nugent?
Fred Bear.
No, but Scream Dream, my buddy, my brother's best friend at the time, bought Scream Dream the day it came out and brought it home. It's got this crazy picture. And come on in. You can't just ask for money without coming in. We've got a special guest on the podcast.
Hello.
How you doing?
Hi, Mrs. Ferry.
It's Mrs. Guile.
How you doing, Mr. Wombacher?
Good.
Yep,
good.
So we're
what's up?
What was your favorite metal album from 1980?
Foghat. What year did that Carry On My Wayward song?
That's Kansas.
Yeah, that was probably around 80, huh?
That was a good song.
I was going to say, I think I was earlier than that.
Darn good song.
Brown, what are you doing in the big city, lady?
Can you hear me okay?
I'm
losing.
No, you're still good.
Okay, I can't hear myself very well. So.
Well, you need to get maybe closer to the mic when you can.
Fine with the mic.
I hope you cut this out. There we go. Okay, yeah.
We got you. My brother's friend bought that brand new, and it seems like that's when he changed more from, I mean, he was kind of heavy metal in the 70s, but he kind of cranked it up a notch to more heavy metal. Wango Tango, Scream Dream, there was more screaming, more upbeat stuff going on.
Right, more aggressive.
Yeah, I think he was trying to fit in with the metal crowd that was coming around, because he was always rock, I thought.
Yeah,
but, that's a good description.
Yeah, Scream Dream. All right, what's your next pick?
Well, I'm just going to do this one to be funny. I actually have nothing to know about this album. Kiss, Unmasked.
Aw.
That's terrible. Just terrible.
I did go and buy that, like, the day that it came out. I made my parents take me to It was some head.
You were a Kiss fanatic back then,
dude.
Right?
I was a big Kiss fan since like 75.
I was a
probably
head
six,
back in the day, you
7 years
you
old.
Through their terrible days.
I was until about 1984, 1985, and then I went, you know what? Iron Maiden's better.
Yeah. My cousin Joe gave me your Laughing Pill. I'm gonna say that every time, but
I could write.
Yeah. So my cousin, he gave me a cassette, not a cassette, an 8-track tape of Kiss Destroyer.
Uh huh.
And it had that intro to Detroit Rock City where it talks about that kid getting killed in the car wreck, and then it has the and then it starts Detroit Rock City. And that just blew my mind for Kiss. And so
what do you think of Kiss Unmasked?
So Kiss Dynasty,
what was the hit on Unmasked?
There were not really any that really were very commercially successful. The album right before that was Dynasty, which was their disco thing, which had I Was Made for Loving You. And then they made it, you know.
That was the creepiest cover, too.
I know,
That
it wasn't
cover,
a cover
scared me as
Oh,
a
the
kid.
Cover of the album. Yeah. Because their faces
down
were all
at
big.
The end of the hall made me scared to go to the bathroom.
For sure. And so Unmasked come out, and the whole cover of the album was like a cartoon, different squares, fully colored cartoon, like a comic book. And then it says, oh, we can't wait till Kiss takes their makeup off. And then they took their makeup off. And there was makeup underneath their makeup. So they really, in Unmasked, did not take their makeup off.
Just Unmasked. And they were doing the penultimate album or whatever.
Yeah, it's right before we take our makeup off. And there was a couple songs that I remembered that I loved that weren't hits. And now I was kind of a big fan of Ace Frehley. When I was a kid, I always call him Ace Frehley. Mm-hmm. But I found out later that it's Frehley.
Like Frehley's Comet.
Like Haley's Comet, exactly. And I didn't know that, so I felt dumb. But anyway, they had a song called Torpedo Girl, which was awesome. And I remember a Paul Stanley song that got moderate airplay called Shandy. It was really fluffy, gross. It wasn't good.
Which of their solo albums did you like best?
Ace Frehley.
Really?
For sure. Without a doubt. I can listen to that whole album. Still, I listen to it every once in a while. I have all of them.
Yeah.
I'd say Gene Simmons takes second, just because.
I just remember the Gene Simmons song, Radioactive Man, whatever it was.
It was just Radioactive. Yeah. And then he had Living in Sin at the Holiday Inn, which is when he was dating Cher at the time.
Yeah.
And they even had her voice on his album as making
you
a phone call.
Believe.
Yeah, she didn't sing, though. She was just talking on the phone. So, yeah, Kiss Unmasked, that was a bad album. And
I just
it built
threw
up
it
a bunch,
in there for humor.
It built up a bunch. It's a good thing that you did because it threw in the story that they built it up that they're going to take off their makeup. And so the cartoon builds, and then they take off their makeup, and they
Gene
still
Simmons
have their makeup
anything
on.
Anything for a motherfucking dollar.
Yeah.
Kiss!
Yeah.
Dr. Pepper with a Kiss.
It was a fun concert, though.
Oh, yeah. And I never got to see Kiss until after they took their makeup off, Animalize with Queensryche, and I went down to California and watched them with my friend Bobby Jordan. But so you kind of did a not really a pick, but you picked it anyway, so I guess.
Oh, I'll go. I'll take it.
Yeah. You'll take it?
Sure.
Yeah.
Where are you taking it?
Good. I don't have to pick it.
Yeah.
Where are you taking it to?
I didn't want to buy
I'll
that
go ahead.
By
where you, where you got it?
Judas Priest, British Steel.
There you go. God. That's what I'm talking about.
Yep.
The one song I can play on guitar.
Breaking the Law?
Breaking the Law.
All right.
How did you know what that song's about, don't you?
I've heard you say it
Breaking
before.
The Law?
It's about gay marriage.
Is it?
Yeah.
If you ask Rob.
Yep.
Because that's Breaking the Law.
Breaking the Law. He was trying to get married back in the day, dude.
I thought maybe he would think it was ignoring the safety word.
What's your safe word? Okay, so British Steel came out with that, and that was awesome. It had a lot of great Metal Gods on
that song. They brought
Metal
in cardboard and air guitar, right?
Living After Midnight.
Yeah.
Yeah, I cut my air band teeth on that album.
You don't have to be old to be wise.
Yeah, I want to do a game show night somewhere and do trivia after midnight. No, nothing?
Trivia after midnight.
Does that
rock it till the
would there be a certain theme of the trivia?
Till the dawn.
Drinking till the morning.
Dude, we got our parody songs rolling.
And I'm gone. I'm gone. It also had fucking Grinder.
I'm wrong.
Grinder.
Which Victims of Internal Decay used to cover
what
back in the day.
Grinder. Very well, my dad.
Grinder. Yeah.
That was actually my alarm. I set my alarm to songs on my phone, and I have that album on my cell phone. And so I woke up to Grinder about a week and a half ago.
My alarm is a
grinder,
sea salt
looking
grinder.
For weed.
Looking yeah. for weed.
And you know, if some morning, you know what I do is I'll set my alarm on my phone, and I'll just scroll down, and not look at it, so I don't know what song it is that's going to wake me up.
Right.
And grinder was one of them about a week and a half ago. It was grinder. And actually, awesome. I get some Sullen tunes every once in a while.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Like, shout out for Sullen.
Like Enters?
Enters You. So, yeah, that album was definitely a
very good one.
It was a good one. It was right after Point of Entry, right mm-hmm. before Screaming
what
for Vengeance.
What was that album about, Point of Entry?
Yeah, it was about a butthole. And later he was Screaming for Vengeance.
You just ruined that album for me.
Before he got to Turbo Lover, Ram It Down. Come on, Rob.
Defenders
give me a break.
Of the Face?
Yeah. I'm heavy duty.
Yeah.
Love bites.
Defenders of the Face. That means he doesn't want to take it in the face. He wants
That's
to,
right.
Yeah. 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 Meanwhile, back at the ranch.
I was talking to somebody the other day. We're in pre-production on the ZappaCast, right?
Yeah.
And I was talking the other day with somebody. I might want to do this in the future. Iron Maiden.
Number of the Beast.
Hey, that was my next Iron pick. Did you pick that one? Maiden.
Was it Number of the Beast, 1980?
It was Iron Maiden.
First one was 1980. Okay. Yeah. See, that was Number of the Beast is one that caught me because Scorpions.
But what about what's your prime cuts on Iron Maiden?
Which one are you asking?
Was it Charlotte the Harlot? No, that
I'm
was
asking
on,
either one of you guys.
That was on Killers.
My favorite was Phantom of the Opera.
Have you ever read that?
This is previous to.
Really? You never read
Bruce Dickinson?
Oh, you gotta read it. I'll loan it to you. I have that.
I will.
We'll trade for Pulp Fiction.
Also add Running Free.
Yeah. Oh, what a great song.
And the song, it did have Charlotte the Harlot. I'm sorry.
It did.
Yep. Yeah. And that was written by Dave Murray.
Was that about
Spider? The blind
guy. Yeah.
That about Charlotte Swebb?
No.
Oh.
It was about Charlotte who lived at 22
Charlotte
Acacia
the Harlot.
Avenue.
22 Acacia Avenue.
That's
was
on,
the song
on,
they did
on
later.
Number of the Beast.
And it was Bruce Dickinson to sing that one.
Yep, yeah. But it was related character to Charlotte the Harlot. So, yeah, Phantom of the Opera, Running Free, and then the sort of ballad, Remember Tomorrow, which was actually more popular from the Made in Japan album, which was live. But
and it was probably the last month or so, I finally Googled the lyrics to that to figure out what they say. I don't remember what it was, but...
On which song?
That last one you said, was it Remember Tomorrow?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's... I can't remember exactly how that song goes, obviously.
Right.
I mentioned that before. But if you can play that would be helpful.
I don't know if I can bring it up or not.
From out of the
just sing it to us.
You know, from out of the dude, you guys like the Bee Gees. That was perfect harmony.
Okay, now I know that these guys aren't really metal, but they were hard rock, and some people hate them, but some people include them. Rush.
Yeah, I got them right down here on my list.
Do you love Rush? Permanent
yes,
Waves?
I do. Yes,
okay.
I do.
Permanent Waves.
Permanent Waves.
Spirit of Radio.
Not as much as I like
Moving
Pictures.
Moving Pictures, right.
Yeah, I mean, that's
well, that was a breakout album, definitely.
Oh, God.
But this one had Free Will.
Yes, great song.
La Villa Strangiato, which is not so much. Thank you. But, you know, these guys were still doing more proggy stuff, more longer songs. But Spirit of Radio, I think.
What does proggy mean?
Progressive metal.
Oh, okay.
Like where they changed parts a lot and they got longer songs and whatnot.
Yeah.
And so they hadn't, I mean, they were already popular in a certain sense, but not Tom Sawyer popular, which came next year.
I'm not a big fan of that song, Tom Sawyer, mostly because of the overplayed, much like Baba O'Reilly overplayed.
It's like your Teen Spirit.
It is.
It's like your You Shook Me All Night Long. It's like you're the boys are back in town.
Yeah,
it's like everything.
I'm a huge fan of Rush.
Bon Jovi.
Yeah, it's like she's my little runaway.
Well, I can't say huge because I don't
actually
know,
I like that. I still like that song.
Still,
that's another. That was the first. You know what? That's I remember you talking about the first vinyl record you ever bought.
Uh huh.
On one of the earlier podcasts,
It was Journey, wasn't it?
I think so.
Hey, thanks for listening to the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was either Journey or the Cars.
Bon Jovi, 78,000 degrees Fahrenheit, was the first first vinyl album I ever bought. And you know why I bought it?
No.
Because it was the only even close to rock and roll album that was in the same store where I bought the stereo I bought when I first got to my first permanent duty station at Fort Campbell.
Uh-huh.
So I walk in here and they say, oh, you're welcome to Fort Campbell. We'll give you all kinds of credit. So I said, I want this stereo because it's got a lot of pretty lights and the speakers are loud. And
it's got those little lights on every EQ switch.
And Bon Jovi, 78,000 degrees Fahrenheit, was the only even remotely close to rock and roll record that they had in there. And it was a turntable on that stereo. So I need to buy a record to play on my turntable.
And it was Rush.
No, it was Bon Jovi.
It was Bon Jovi's.
But do you know what the significance of the album title is of 7,800 degrees Fahrenheit?
7,800. I've been saying 1,000, haven't I?
It's 7,800 degrees Fahrenheit, and that is the temperature that metal melts.
What kind of metal?
Metal.
Metal.
I don't know. That's
metal rules.
And
dude,
why would Bon Jovi have that title? He's not even that metal. What was the hit off that album?
Runaway.
Oh,
what's
really?
That doing with the Scorps though? Scorps from 80.
Because
Bon Jovi
because
in 80?
No, it was a little. It was I want to say 1980.
It was just a related story. Okay. A related.
Oh, yeah. I got lost in the story somewhere.
He mentioned Runaway. I mentioned Bon Jovi because it was the first record album I'd ever bought.
Right.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah,
that's cool.
What else you got for us, Dustin? Anything?
I got we haven't talked about Animal Magnetism by Scorpions.
Scorpions. That's a great album.
The Zoo.
The Zoo is on that.
Da-da-da.
And also, one not as popular, but one I loved a lot was Don't Make No Promises That Your Body Can't Keep.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Don't make no promises.
That sounds like something Sammy Hagar might say.
Yeah, what he said.
And the first album was, or the first song, it was a big hit, too. What was the name of that song? I'm going to have to peek. Do you guys remember the name of the first song on that album?
It wasn't Animal Magnetism.
No.
That's the instrumental.
Yeah. Oh, Make It Real.
Make it real, not fantasy.
Or something like that, yeah.
Because I caught the Scorpions right after Blackout came out. That's when I jumped on the bandwagon. And that album came out, and the first thing I did was go look for their last one, which was Animal Magnetism,
right,
which is really
it is good.
Style-wise,
it's like Blackout.
It's
a little less produced because they were getting more popular and they were spending more time on albums and whatnot. But
but it got them in a position to release Blackout.
Yep,
and it's that good.
So were either of you guys ever into the band Crocus?
Oh yeah. I saw them with a band that I used to drink with called, what the hell is the name of that band? Rocks with two X's.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And they used to play that Clementine. What the hell is the name of that place?
The Wizards.
No, it was about a mile south of east of Fort Campbell.
It wasn't Clementine.
Oh, shit. I'm going to text this to you guys.
Okay.
I'll figure it out. Anyway.
That's cool.
It was a bar that I met Pat Travers there.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Pat Travers.
Was he Traverin?
He was playing in a Traverin band?
No. Well, yeah.
Oh, wait. That's John Plogerty. Sorry about that.
That sounded awfully Chinese.
You're playing in a Traverin band.
Traverin band. Pat Traver.
But yeah, Crocus had an album called Metal Rendezvous, but none of the songs were hits. I didn't get into Crocus until Long Stick Goes Boom.
It was Headhunter that got me. Headhunter's what got me. I saw him, and the reason why I jumped back to that band Rocks is because Rocks scored a show opening for Crocus and Judas Priest, and it was Judas Priest Turbo Lover. In an open air amphitheater.
What's that album about?
Yeah. It was in an open air amphitheater in Nashville, Tennessee.
Wow.
And that was a pretty cool show. And I knew all the guys in the band that was opening that show.
Huh.
You know, because they played in this bar outside of Fort Campbell, and I used to go there all the time. And, you know, you ever heard of a band called Warchild? Probably not.
No.
Yeah.
So
that was the first metal band I think I ever got to know. I knew them before I knew you.
Right on.
Yeah.
So yeah, anyway, what was the big songs off of that 80s Crocus album?
None. Oh, none. Okay. I just mentioned it because I liked Crocus. It's called Metal Rendezvous.
Mentions. I got an honorable mention.
Read some of them.
Yeah.
I never heard of them. No. Heard of that one. You can't even find them on Google?
What? Oh, they got some of the names of the songs?
Read a couple of them.
I already went away from it, but I can go back. Yeah, it was... shit, I can't even remember.
Oh, sorry, dude.
That's all right. Metal Rendezvous had songs like Heatstroke, Bedside Radio, Steamer, Shy Kid, Tokyo Nights, Lady Cleveland. Double Dealer.
Cleveland.
Cleveland Steamers. No, but yeah, they had
I meant Cleveland on Family Guy.
Well, now I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So I got an honorable mention that you guys will probably know more than I will.
What's that?
It is Saxon.
Wheels of Steel.
Party
Till
You
Puke. Two albums come out in 1980, Wheels of Steel and Strong Arm of the Law.
Now, I got into Saxon when Crusader came out, but then I kind of went back to Wheels of Steel.
It probably didn't take long.
Yeah, those guys were... What do you mean?
No, they were fun, but everything sounded the same.
Yeah.
Every Saxon song sounds exactly like every Saxon song.
I thought we were
going to
have our first.
And they weren't the songwriters that...
And some of their songs were like almost Christian. Like the song Crusader is almost Christian lyrics. Like
I could see that. Yeah. I could see how
song.
I saw them open for it was Rat, Fastway, and Saxon at the Memorial Coliseum, and it was the best seats I ever had for a concert in Memorial Coliseum.
Like
12 rows away from the stage, but in the first row on the side. So I could see all the shit going on backstage, and it was Rat, Fastway, and Saxon. I had never heard Saxon before, and the only song I remember for that show is Party Till You Puke, because I did.
That's perfect. That's the best way to remember it.
Right on. Well, you got anything else? Any other honorable mentions?
There's another album that I don't know much about, but he was definitely a stalwart of metal. Bruce Dickinson's band called Samson that he was in before Iron Maiden.
Wow.
Yeah, he put out an album that actually had one song that turned into the Ides of March, which was a song off of a Dickinson. Kind of cool to know that he was still plugging along and he hadn't been in the band. He was probably a fan of the band at the time.
What a set of pipes.
And Blue Oyster Cult, actually. I know a lot of people don't think that they're metal. They're one of the first bands I ever saw live as a child.
Really?
Yeah.
Blue Oyster Cult and Bob Seger.
Very cool.
Lane County Fairgrounds. I think I was 7 years old.
Jeez.
So this album, actually, I don't...
Fire of Unknown Origin?
Cultosaurus Erectus.
Whoa.
What the hell's on that album?
Nothing that I'm recognizing.
Well, read some of them, see if I recognize
Black Blade, no. Monsters,
no.
Divine Wind, Deadline, The Marshall Plan, Hungry Boys, Fallen Angel, Lips in the Hills.
What?
An Unknown Tongue. So, Cultosaurus Erectus, 1980, Blue Oyster Cult.
Yeah.
The first album I saw was Fire of Unknown Origin?
I think so, And did it have Godzilla on it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, no. They say he got to go. Oh, no. Godzilla. Accept had an album. Oh, Alice Cooper had an album in 1980, Flesh the Fashion, and that's when he kind of...
Tried to get on the radio.
Yeah, he went a little bit like, who do you think we are? Special Forces in an armored car.
There's more money in getting played on the radio than there is being... the guy who is against being on the radio.
Exactly. And other honorable mentions are like Thin Lizzy had an album, Girl School had an album, UFO.
That's a great Britney Fox song.
What? Girl School?
Girl School, yeah.
Oh, no.
Girl School.
Britney Fox. Is that an 80s rocker chick?
Oh, that's... No. Britney Fox is a Cinderella lookalike band.
Are they guys, though?
Yeah. Oh, barely.
Barely.
Yeah, they got. I mean, we're talking, 12, 15 inches of hair above their heads.
That's always awesome.
Yeah. Da, 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 da. Long way to love.
Well, Britney Fox. Maybe we'll get to them on some of our later 80s episodes. There's
if you want to outro with that would be cool.
Britney Fox?
Yeah, the guitar
that's
bit on
that. That's not 1980.
If you can bring, no, I know, but...
Yeah, we got to have a 1980 song to round out our 1980
episode.
I can
live with that.
But here's
my next guest star on the Tagcast, though. I want Britney Fox. I want that guitar intro.
Okay. You got to just, as long as you can give me the name of the song. I can pull it out.
Long Way to Love.
Okay, Long Way to Love. I'll put that in my favorites, and so that
Big
way I'll
hair.
Remember. There's some bands else? Here that Metallica.
Ron Ferris looked at this guy and said, damn, that's some big hair.
Yeah. So Metallica was getting ready to get probably together at this point because they kind of came out at, you know, 1981 when they first started jamming. Now listen to all these bands that are on this list here. Angel Witch, which was Diamond Head, Budgie. All three bands that Metallica covered songs from.
Yep.
So that's kind of cool to know that those bands were releasing stuff at the time. And all that means is that Metallica was listening to what was in the charts, and that's what they were wanting to do. I don't think those albums were popular.
No, but they're popular as far as the metal albums.
Right.
Metal
but they found some gems.
Oh, they did. And thanks to them, we heard those gems. I would have never heard those songs, you know. And
Who did Green Hill? It was...
The Misfits.
Yeah, The Misfits.
And I didn't even listen to The Misfits that much back in the day, but... So, I don't know.
What was his name, the lead singer? The Misfits?
Glenn Danzig.
Glenn Danzig.
Yeah, and he had Danzig.
It's not the same guy that does Danzig, is it?
Yeah. Yeah. That's the same guy.
Mother! Green Hill!
That's fucking awesome.
That is Glenn Danzig. Yeah, those ones are cool. Remember Broken Bones?
Is that all you got over there?
Yeah, that's all I got. So this has been another bonus-ode, number two, and we're covering albums from 1980 of hard rock and metal. Maybe we'll go out with what I was saying was Ted Nugent from Scream Dream.
Go ahead and go on to our website and click on the Amazon link if you're interested in checking out any
support
of these albums.
Support the show.
Yeah, and that way when you buy it, we'll get a little kickback.
Yeah.
I won't, but they will.
We'll kick a little to you.
I'm going to have a conversation with my agent because I distinctly heard my agent say there would be a deli tray in the green room.
And it's not even green. There's a green tray in the deli room. But anyway, this has been 1980 albums of hard rock. Thanks for listening. You can go to iTunes and rate us if you want to.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
That'll help us out.
Maybe you can go to organlive.com and make fun of me on the internet.
Yeah, Blazer Wookie.
Ooh,
make fun of him.
All right, well, take it easy, guys.
Peace out.
Rock on.
And
have
metal.
A good night.
Fun in the belly? Want to find where the music and comedy is tonight? Go to WVMP.org to find out what's going on. Bands and promoters, add your events. WVMP.org.
TagCast Podcast, TagCast Podcast, TagCastPodcast.com.